good. At first I thought she was just made that way, you know, like your skin is black and I'm devastatingly handsome.
Jarl raised an eyebrow. He didn't laugh.
But now I've seen that she has to work at it. She does work at it, and she's been working at it for as long as I've been working at learning to kill people.
So she's a saint. Doesn't answer my question.
Mama Kay used to say that we become the masks we wear. What's under the mask for us, Jarl? Aline knows me in a way no one else does. I've changed my name, changed my identity, left everything and everyone I've ever known. I'm all lies, Jarl. But as long as Aline knows me, maybe there is a real me. Do you know what I mean?
You know, I was wrong about you. When you got yourself killed, saving Aline and Yuli, I thought you were a hero. You're no hero. You just fucking hate yourself.
Excuse me?
You're a coward. So you've done bad stuff. Join the club. You know what? I'm glad you did. It made you something better than a saint.
A killer's better than a saint? What sort of fucked up Sakage thinking is
that? It made you useful. Do you know what it's like in Sonaria right now? You wouldn't believe me. I didn't come here to find a killer. I came to find the killer, the Night Angel, the man who's more than just a wet boy, because the problems we have now are bigger than any wet boy could handle. There's only one man who can help us, Kyler, and that's you. Believe me, you weren't my first choice.
What's that supposed to mean?
I didn't mean...
What were you about to say?
We had to be sure, Kyler. We were very respectful. I want you to know that. It was Mama Kay's idea. He used to be immortal. We had to make sure...
You dug up my master's corpse?
We put it... him... back... just how you buried him. It was maybe a week after the invasion.
You dug him up while I was still in the city?
We couldn't tell you beforehand, and afterward there was no reason to. Mama Kay said the body would be there, that Durzo had given his immortality to you. But when she saw him... It was the scariest thing I've ever seen, Kyler. I mean, I was practically raised by the woman, and I've never seen her like that. Hysterical, weeping and screaming. Here we are, in the middle of the cloudy night. We'd paddled out to Voss Island with oars wrapped in wool, and she starts wailing, out of her mind. I was so sure a patrol would come that I wanted to get off the island immediately. But she wouldn't leave until he was just how you left him.
Like Kyler cared that Durzo be left on that damned rock. If they were going to dig him up, they could have at least brought him.
Where? Home? What home did Durzo Blint ever have? How'd he look?
Shit. He looked like he'd been in the ground a week. What do you think?
Of course he did.
Damn it, Master Blint. Why'd you give me your immortality? Were you just sick of living? Why didn't you tell me anything?
But then maybe he had told him in the note he'd given Kyler, the note that had been soaked with blood, illegible.
You want me to break into the hole and save Logan?
Do you know who the God King keeps as his concubines? Young girls from noble families, prefers virgins. He guesses how much humiliation and debasement each girl can take. Puts them in tower rooms with balconies where all the railings have been torn off so the jump beckons every day. It's a game for him.
Get to the point.
He took Sarah and Mags Drake. Sarah killed herself in the first week. Mags is still there.
Sarah and Mags were practically Kyler's sisters. Mags had always been his pal, always quick with a laugh, always smiling. He'd been so self-absorbed since the coup that he'd barely thought of them.
I want you to rescue Logan. And then I want you to assassinate the God King.
Is that all? Let me guess. Logan first, because my odds with the God King aren't so great?
That's right. That's how I have to think, Kyler. I'm fighting a war. And people better than us are dying in it every day. And you're sitting around because of what some girl thinks.
Don't you talk about Aline.
Or what? You breathe heavily on me? You're the dumbass who swore off violence. Yes, I know about that. Let me tell you something. Roth made a lot of people miserable. I'm glad you killed him, all right? He fucked me up bad, but he doesn't hold a candle to his father. Fuck! Look at yourself. I know this hit is impossible. I'm sending you after a god. But if anyone in the world can do it, it's you. You were made for this, Kyler. Do you think you made it through all the shit you made it through so that you can sell hangover potions? Some things are bigger than your happiness, Kyler. You can give hope to an entire nation.
It'll only cost me everything.
You're an immortal. There'll be other girls.
Fuck you.
I'm sorry. I guess there will be other God Kings and other Shingas too. I just... We need you. Logan will die if you don't come. So will Mags. And so will a lot of other people you'll never know.
All right. I'll take the contract.
It's good to have you back, my friend.
It's bad to be back.
I didn't want to say it before. But have you done something to piss off the local Shinga? Because one of my sources told me the Shinga put out a contract on a Cenarian wet boy. He didn't know any details. But I don't figure there's all that many Cenarian wet boys hanging around. The longer you're here, the more you put Aline and Yuli in danger.
Durzo had taught Kyler that the best way to cancel a contract was to cancel the contract giver. For Aline and Yuli and Aunt Mia and even Bran to be saved, Baruch Schnigel had to die. Kyler stood woodenly and went upstairs. He returned a minute later with a visage as dark as the wet boy grays he wore once again. V looked at the bow in her hands, trying to convince herself to pull back the red and black arrow. She was on a rooftop looking into the midwife's home. She'd been there for an hour. Her back was to a chimney, and she'd wrapped herself in shadows. She wasn't invisible by any means, but crouched low in the dying light with the sun behind her, she was close enough. She'd come to Caer Narvon to escape this. She thought the only way to not kill Jarl and to still escape the God King's wrath was to kill Kyler. In the time she was away, Jarl would flee or be killed by another wet boy. How could he have come here? She wanted to shoot past him, shoot Kyler, and pretend that Jarl wasn't here, pretend that she'd never gotten the note. But she didn't have the shot to take Kyler down, and lies would go nowhere with the God King. Jarl sat right in front of the window. The window was even open. V was using a talent-tension bow, a bow so powerful that only a person with the talent could draw it. So the red and black traitor's arrow could have punched right through a window, through shutters for that matter. But she didn't even need it. Charles sat there, utterly exposed. He never would have made such a mistake in Cenaria. But here he felt safe. He'd fled straight into death's arms. Yet she waited. Damn Jarl for his stupidity. If V didn't kill him, the God King would know. He would find her.
Damn you, Jarl. Damn you for your kindness.
Finish the job. Hugh Gibbet liked to torture his debtors first, but he only did it when he was sure he wouldn't be interrupted. Hugh Gibbet always finished the job. The perfect shot never comes. Take any shot that kills.
Motherfucker.
The curse activated her talent. V stood and drew the arrow to her cheek. It moved her out of the silhouette of the small chimney into the dying light.
Damn you, Jarl. Move!
She couldn't run away. In Gandu or Ymir, the God King would never find her, would he? She couldn't believe it. She had told no one she was coming here, left no sign, and yet he knew. If she fled, the God King would send her master after her, and Hugh Gibbet never failed. For everything that V's beauty accomplished for her, the one thing it made nearly impossible was hiding. She'd never worried about disguises. She'd never thought of it as a weakness. Until now.
Come on, Kyler. Just walk in front of the window. Just once.
She was shaking violently now, and not just from the talent burning in her, not just from the tension of holding the bow drawn for so long. Jarl's face was drawn with compassion, sorrow. And that look she'd seen before when Jarl had taken care of her after Hugh Gibbet came in to test the new skills Mama Kay had been teaching her, and found her lacking, and beat her senseless, and violated her in every way he could imagine. At that look, V's vision went blurry. She blinked and blinked, refusing to believe it was tears. She hadn't cried since that night,
since Jarl had held her, rocking her, helping her put the fractured pieces of herself back together. Jarl stood and walked to the window. He lifted his eyes and saw V, a dark silhouette lined with sunlight. Surprise lit his eyes, and as it was followed by recognition, what other wet boy had a woman's silhouette? She could swear she saw her name on his lips. Her fingers went limp, and the bowstring slipped. The red and black traitor's arrow leapt across that narrowest of chasms, the distance between a wet boy and her debtor. It cut a red path through the air as if the night itself were bleeding.
Aline, I'm sorry.
Kyla wrote in a shaky hand.
I tried. I swear I tried. Some things are worth more than my happiness. Some things only I can do. Sell these to Master Barari and move the family to a better part of town. I will always love you.
Taking the ring box from his pocket, he placed it on top of the scrap of parchment.
What's in the box?
Kyla couldn't look back at his friend.
My heart. Just some earrings.
You are going to marry her.
A lump rose in Kyler's throat. There were no words. He had to look away from Jarl's eyes.
Have you ever heard of cruxing?
Jarl shook his head.
It's how Alatarans execute rebels. They stretch them on a wood frame and pound nails through their wrists and feet. To breathe, the criminal has to lift his weight on the nails. It sometimes takes a man a day to die, asphyxiated by his own weight.
Kyler couldn't complete the metaphor, though he could feel himself being stretched out, a rebel against fate in a malevolent universe bent on crushing all things good, stretched between Logan and Aline, nailed to each with loyalty owed and gasping under the crushing weight of his own character. But it wasn't just Aline and Logan that stretched him here. It was two lives, two paths, the way of the shadows and the way of the light, the wolf and the wolfhound. Or was it wolfhound and lapdog? Kyler had thought he could change. He thought he could have everything. He'd run headfirst into either or and chosen both. That was what had driven him to the crux. Not the machinations of a trickster god or the implacable roll of fortune's wheel. Kyler's options had spread further and further apart, and he'd held on until he couldn't breathe. Only one question mattered now. What kind of man am I?
Let's go.
Jarl was standing at the window, pensive.
I was in love once, or something like it, with a beautiful girl nearly as fucked up as I am.
Who was she?
Her name was Viridiana. V. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Jarl looked up and stiffened.
V?
He went down in a spray of blood, an arrow passing fully through the center of his neck. His body dropped to the wood floor like a sack of flour. He blinked once. His eyes were neither afraid nor angry. His expression was wry. Can you believe that? His eyes asked as Kyler drew him into his lap. And then Jarl's eyes said nothing at all. Yuli was clutching the very doll that Kyler had picked up a few days before. Aline smiled. Kyler was doing better at being a father than he knew.
Yes, but you run right home. Promise.
Promise!
Aline watched her go, feeling anxious, but she always felt anxious about little things. Caernarvon wasn't like the Warrens. Besides, the house was only two blocks away.
We need to talk, don't we?
It was getting late. The sun's rays slanted down on merchants who were packing up their goods and heading home.
I promised Kyla. We agreed that we'd never tell anyone, but...
Then don't say another word.
I can't. I can't do this anymore.
So Aline told Aunt Mia everything. From the lie of their marriage, to their fights about sex, to Kyler's being a wet boy and trying to leave it behind. Aunt Mia didn't even look surprised.
Aline... Do you love Kyler, or are you with him because Yuli needs a mother?
Aline paused to fully humble herself in the face of the question, to make sure what she would say was true.
I love him. Yuri is part of it, but I really love him.
Then why are you protecting yourself?
I'm not protecting.
You can't be honest with me until you're honest with yourself.
Aline looked at her hands. The light was fading, and the street was beginning to get dark.
We have to get back. Dinner must be getting cold.
Child?
He's a killer. I mean, he's killed people.
No, you were right. He's a killer.
No, he's a good man. He can change. I know it.
Child, do you know why you're talking to me, even though you promised Kyla you wouldn't? Because you agreed to something that isn't in your nature. You make a terrible liar, but you tried because you promised. Isn't that what he's done?
What do you mean?
If you can't love Kyla for the man he is, if you only love him for the man you think he could be, you'll cripple him.
Kyla had been so unhappy. When he'd started going out at night, she hadn't asked, hadn't wanted to know what he did.
What am I supposed to do?
Do you think you're the first woman who's been afraid to love?
The words cut deep. It cast a different light on their nightly making out and fighting. She thought she was being holy by not making love with Kyler, but she was just terrified. She felt so far out of control already that surrender in the bedroom would have left her powerless.
Can I love him if I hate what he does?
Child, loving is an act of faith as much as believing in the God is.
He isn't a believer. An ox and a wolf can't be yoked together.
You think a yoke only refers to wedding rings or lovemaking? You don't need to understand him, Aline. You need to love him until you do. Come on, let's go eat our dinner.
They walked back to the house together, Aline feeling lighter than she had in months, even if she was going to have a big talk with Kyler. She felt a new sense of hope. Aline threw the door open, but the house was silent, empty.
Kyla! Yuli!
There was no answer. The food was cold on the counter. The jelly Kyler had been making congealed and cracked. Her heart clogged her throat. Every breath was an effort. Aunt Mia looked horrified. Aline ran upstairs and clawed at the box of Kyla's wet boy clothes and his big sword. It was empty. There was no sign of anything. She walked back downstairs, the truth coming to her as slowly as the setting sun.
Are we going to be all right?
After tonight, we are.
Kyler's wedding ring sat next to the stove. There was no note, nothing else. Even Yuli was gone. Kyler had finally given up on her. He was gone. V slung the wiggling child off her shoulder as they came into the stable of the seedy inn where she'd put up her horse. The stable boy lay unconscious and bleeding by the door. He'd probably live. It didn't matter. He hadn't seen V before she'd clubbed him with the pommel of her short sword. V knelt and grabbed the girl's throat in one hand. She pulled out the gag.
What's your name?
Go to hell!
V slapped the girl impassively the way Hugh used to slap her when he was bored. When the girl tried to get away, she clamped her hand down on her throat, the threat explicit. The more you wiggle, the more you choke.
Fine, go to hell. You want me to call you that or something else?
You're a bitch!
V spun her into her body and clamped a hand over her mouth. With the other hand, she found a pain point in one of the girl's elbows and ground her fingers in.
Why haven't I killed her yet?
The job had gone flawlessly. Kyler had taken Jarl's body after arming himself for hunting. V had only seen brief glimpses of blades being sheathed and disappearing. Surely it was a trick of the light and the distance. Kyler couldn't really be invisible. Regardless, after a while he'd taken Jarl's body and V had gone into the house. She intended to set a few traps. There was a perfect contact poison that she could smear on the door latch of his bedroom and a needle trap that would fit perfectly in the little box he kept under the bed. But she couldn't do it. Still reeling from Jarl's murder, she walked around the house like a common prowler. V found a note and a pair of earrings that looked expensive. The note said as much, even though they were oddly mismatched, one larger than the other. She pocketed both, but didn't touch the thin gold wedding band by the stove. Let the happy little family keep its heirlooms. She wasn't sure what the note meant. Kyler had tried,
tried to protect Jarl? The door opened, surprising V, and the little girl had walked in. V bound and gagged her, then stood looking at the mess she'd got herself into. She was finished. She couldn't kill this child. She couldn't even kill Kyler. No, that wasn't true. She was sure she could still kill Kyler. The only way she could escape the God King with her life was to please him. He would be more pleased if she delivered Kyler alive. If she delivered Kyler alive, the God King would never know her weakness. She'd buy herself time to recover whatever it was that had cracked in her as she'd watched Jarl die in a spray of blood. Galvanized, V went back to Kyler's bedroom. She carved the Cenarian Sakage's glyph into the bedside table in a fine light hand. Beneath it, she traced.
I've got the girl.
When Kyler came back, he'd find his daughter gone, and he'd scour the entire house. He'd find it, and he'd follow V straight to the God King. So now, all V had to do was figure out how to smuggle a wailing child out of the city.
Let's try again. What's your name?
Yuli.
All right, Ugly. We are leaving. You can come with me alive or dead. It doesn't matter. You've served your purpose. I'm going to tie your hands to the saddle so you can jump off the horse if you want, but you'll just get kicked and dragged to death. Your choice. Open your mouth.
Yuli opened her mouth, and V stuffed the gag in.
Be silent!
Yuli's mouth moved, but no sound came out. V pulled out the rag. It wasn't necessary now. It had been a little trick she'd discovered a few years ago by accident. It was spotty, but a merely silent child would be easier to get out of the city than a gagged one. V saddled her horse and the second-best horse in the stable. In half an hour, Carnarvon was fading into the distance, but freedom was still a long way off. Cold fury burned the world white. Kyler sprinted across the rooftop. He reached the edge and leapt, soaring through the night air. He cleared the 20-foot gap easily and ran up the wall. He pushed off it, grabbed the extended roof beam, and flipped himself up onto it, not even wobbling. He'd done it all while invisible, a fact that would have pleased him immensely a few days ago. Today, he had no ability to feel pleasure at all. His eyes scanned the dark streets. Before he'd left, he'd cleaned Jarl's blood from the floor. He wasn't going to make a lean deal with that. He'd taken his friend's body to a cemetery. Jarl wouldn't rot in a sewer like some gutter shite. Kyler didn't even have the money to pay a gravedigger.
Thanks, God.
He left Jarl and swore to return. Jarl was dead. Part of Kyler didn't believe it, the part that had thought the soft life of a wagering or a healer might be his. How could he have believed that? There was nothing soft in a Night Angel's life. Nothing. He was a killer. Death rose in his passage like mud swirling behind a stick dragged across the bottom of a clear, still pond. There. Two punks were hassling a drunk. Gods, was that the same drunk he'd left to his fate the other night? Kyler dropped from the roof. Kyler let himself shimmer into partial visibility. Muscles gleaming, iridescent black, eyes black orbs, face a mask of fury. He only intended to scare the knife wielder, but as the hoodlum's eyes widened at the sight of him, Kyler swore he saw something so dark in them that it compelled him to act. Before he knew it, the punch sword was drinking Hart's blood. The hoodlum's knife dropping on the ground.
What are you doing, Tyre?
A moment later, Kyler had the mugger pinned against the wall by his throat.
What are you?
Kyler caught one of the mugger's flailing hands in his own and squeezed.
Oh shit, my hand!
Where's the Shinga? I won't repeat myself again.
You! No! Stop! Third warehouse down from Dock 3! Oh, God, what are you?
I am Retribution.
The warehouse was definitely the Shinga's place, but Baruch Sniggle wasn't there. Kyler supposed it was too much to expect. There were, however, 10 guards waiting inside the front door. Kyler stared down at them from the ceiling beams, looking for one who might know more than the others. The presence of the guards was evidence enough that Baruch Schnigel had sent the wet boy who killed Jarl. Kyler had no idea how they'd learned that he was the one who'd made Schnigel wet himself the other night, but killing the wrong man for it was exactly what this Shinga would do. Kyler dropped behind a man who looked like the leader. He broke the man's right arm and drew the man's sword. Kyler stood over the leader, the last man alive, and again allowed his eyes and face to become visible. He put one foot on the man's broken arm and touched the sword to his neck.
You're the wet boy. He said you were a girl.
Wrong. Tell me.
The singer said he pissed off some Cenarian wet boy. We were supposed to kill you if you came here.
Where is he?
If I tell you, will you let me live?
Yes.
The man told him of a hideout and another trap. An underground room with only one entrance, another 10 guards.
Tell them the Night Angel walks. Tell them justice is come.
Gorky's face appeared in the dim light of his torch. He looked pleased. Logan hated the man with all his heart.
Fresh meat, kiddos! Sweet, fresh meat!
Since Logan had jumped down the hole 82 days ago, they had only thrown one prisoner in the hole. Gorky had done it, and he had thrown the man into the hole. Straight into the hole. The convict's face had smacked wetly against the lip of the hole, and his body had plunged into the abyss. Now the animals and the monsters crowded around the hole, as they did when Gorky threw in bread. It wasn't to save the prisoners' lives. It was to save their meat.
All right, my lovelies. Who's first?
Keeping an eye on Finn, who was also eyeing him, Logan stayed back from the edge of the hole. He had the longest reach, but catching a falling body was different from catching falling bread. And Finn had uncoiled his sinew rope from around his body. There was a scuffle above, and a woman flung herself at the grate. Gorky tried to intercept her, but she dove under his arms. She dropped head first toward the floor, then jerked to a stop as Gorky caught her dress.
Get your hands off me!
She screamed and kicked as she hung directly over Logan's head. He jumped and grabbed one of her flailing arms and yanked, but his hand slipped. She dropped a few more feet forward so that she was hanging upside down, 10 feet from the stone floor. Gorky was on his knees, holding onto the girl's dress with one hand and onto the grate with the other. His head was exposed, for Finn, who practiced incessantly with his lasso, it was an easy target. Logan jumped and reached for the girl's hand again, but missed. Finn came running with the lasso in his hand. Logan jumped again and caught the girl's hand. Her dress tore and she fell on top of Logan. He was barely able to break her fall, only trying to angle her away from the abyss. Logan staggered to his feet and saw Gorky's face livid in the torchlight, still exposed, just waiting for a noose to drop around his neck, just begging to be dragged into the hole and torn apart. Turning, Logan saw Finn just feet away. But the man had dropped his lasso. Logan barely had time to see the glittering steel in Finn's hand. Flesh parted along Logan's ribs and his left arm as he twisted hard to avoid the blade. Finn's hand got caught between Logan's left arm and his body as Logan twisted. Logan brought a fist toward Finn's head, but the man ducked, fell to the floor, and scurried back. Logan started to go after him, determined to kill the man while he had the chance. But as he moved forward, behind him, the holers closed on the girl. He knew what they saw when they looked at a young, half-naked woman dazed from a fall. The animals collapsed backward. The girl had picked up the knife and was standing now with her back to the wall. She braced herself to keep from falling. From the way she stood, she'd sprained her ankle in the fall.
Stay back! Stay back!
Her eyes darted from Logan to the abyss and then to Nasher. The girl was shaking. She was pretty in a fragile sort of way, with long blonde hair and fine features. She was barely dirty, though, so she couldn't have been in prison long. Long enough for Gorky, though. Damn him to the ninth circle of hell. There was fresh blood staining her torn dress between her legs.
Easy. I'm not going to hurt you. But we need to move, or they'll start falling on us.
Her eyes flashed up at the grate, and she began scooting along the circular wall. Gorky had been pulled away from the grate by the other guards. The rest of the prisoners were herded to the grate. The first man didn't want to jump in, so they pushed him. The 15-foot fall onto solid rock broke his legs, and the holders were on him in seconds. Logan had no time for it. On another day, he might have fought for meat himself, but he wouldn't feed today. Not with this girl here. Her presence made him remember better things. He wanted to weep.
Gods! Natasa Grace!
He shouldn't have said anything, but the shock of seeing another Nova was too great. At 17, Natasa was the second eldest Grayson daughter. She was his cousin. Natasa Grayson stared at him, her wide, frightened eyes taking in the tall, emaciated wreck of what had been a huge, athletic body. He was a shadow of what he had been, but though he had withered, he was still tall, unmistakably tall. He held his hands up to silence her, but he was too late.
Logan! Logan Geyer!
He felt his world ending. In all the time he'd been down here, he'd been only king or 13. In the madness of hunger, he'd eventually joined the others who stood around the hole to catch bread. With his long reach, he got more than most at the cost of letting Gorky know that a tall blonde man was in the hole. But he'd never, never, never used his real name. Shooting a glance over his shoulder, he saw that new prisoners were still dropping in the hole, sprawling as they hit the ground. The holders were fighting. A lot of noise, a lot of confusion, a lot of distractions. Perhaps it had passed without notice. But one of the new prisoners wasn't whimpering, wasn't confused, wasn't distracted. Tensor Vargen didn't appear frightened. Despite the noise and the heat and the stink and the darkness and the violence, his head was tilted toward Logan and Natasa, his eyes squinting against the midnight dark. He looked thoughtful. Aline couldn't breathe. Kyler hadn't only left her, he'd taken Yuli. The rejection was complete. Things had seemed to be going so well. No, things had been going so well. Aline couldn't believe it. Wouldn't believe it. She scoured the kitchen for some sign. She found a stain on the floorboards, dark against dark wood, hastily cleaned up. Nothing looked like it had been spilled from the cooking, but she couldn't tell what it might be. Then she found a deep, thin gouge in the floor nearby. She went upstairs. Kyla's wet boy grays were gone, as was Retribution. She was sliding the box back under the bed when she saw the Sonarian Sakage symbol scrawled into the bedside table.
We have the girl.
Aline's heart dropped again. Someone had taken Yuli, and Kyler had gone after them. The revelation brought fear and joy intermingled. Kyler hadn't abandoned her, but Yuli had been kidnapped by someone who knew who she was. Someone was trying to trap Kyler. But where had Kyler been when Yuli was taken? If someone had grabbed Yuli on the street, they might have left a note on the front doorstep. But Aline didn't think they'd dare to break in with Kyler downstairs.
Open the door! In the name of the Queen, open the door!
When Aline saw Aunt Mia let the city watch in, her heart seized with fear again. In Sonaria, the guards were considered so corrupt that no one trusted them. But then Aline saw Aunt Mia's obvious relief. It took almost an hour to sort things out. A neighbor had seen Kyler leave carrying a body over his shoulder, a handsome young man with dark skin, his hair in micro braids capped with gold beads. Aline knew instantly it had to be Jarl. After Kyler left with the body, the neighbor had gone running for the guards. The guards were only halfway to the house when they were met by the neighbor's wife, who'd seen a woman with a bow enter the house about a minute before Yuli returned home and then leave with a girl. From the evidence, the watch thought the woman was the murderer, thank the god, but they still wanted to talk to Kyler. Aline lay in bed late that night, mourning Jarl, and trying to make sense of it. Why would Jarl come here? Because he was in danger? Because he wanted Kyler to do a job? Just to visit? Aline had to think it was to get Kyler to do a job. Jarl was too important to leave Sonaria on a whim, and if he had left because he was in danger, he'd have had bodyguards. So Jarl had been killed. By accident? While trying to hire Kyler? Kyler had either agreed to do the job, or he was going out for vengeance. Either way, he'd left before Yuli's kidnapping. He might not know about it. By noon the next day, Kyler still hadn't returned. There was a knock on the door, and Aline hurried to answer it. It was one of the guards from yesterday.
I just thought you should know. We talked to the gate guards as soon as we could, but shifts changed, and it's hard to get word to everyone. A young woman matching the killer's description left yesterday, headed north. She had a little girl with her. We've already sent men after her, but she's got a good head start. I'm sorry.
After the guard left, Bran and Aunt Mia looked at Aline as if they expected her to burst into tears.
I'm going after Yuli.
But...
I know, believe me. I know I'm the last person who should go. But what else am I going to do? If Kyler comes back here, tell him where I went. He'll catch up with me, I'm sure. If he's already gone after them, I'll meet him on his way back. But if he doesn't know Yuli's been kidnapped, I might be her only chance.
I understand.
Aline's things fit in a small pack, and by the time she got downstairs, Aunt Mia had packed her enough food for a week.
Is Brayan going to say goodbye?
Aunt Mia took Aline outside.
Brayan says goodbye in his own way.
There was a horse saddled in front of the shop. It was sturdy and gentle-looking. Aline's eyes flooded with tears. She thought she was going to walk.
He says he's had some big orders recently. Now go, child, and may the god go with you.
Kyler was standing over the grave he'd dug and doing his best to get drunk. It was still 2 hours before dawn. The cemetery was quiet. Kyler had chosen this cemetery because it was the richest one on his way out of the city. After killing the Shinga, he'd robbed the man, so he had plenty of money, and Jarl deserved the best. If the gravekeeper were true to his word, there would even be a headstone here in a week. They made quite a pair. Jarl laid out on the ground next to the hole, the gore a darker black than his skin, limbs slowly stiffening. Kyler was more blood-spattered than his dead friend, Kruer dying into hard ridges on his limbs, cracking as he worked, reconstituting as he perspired. It made him look like he was sweating blood. The grave was finished. Now Kyler was supposed to say something significant. He drank more wine. He'd brought 4 skins and already emptied 2. A year ago, 2 would have flattened him. Now, he wasn't even tipsy. He finished the 3rd skin, then dutifully took deep draughts of the 4th until it was gone. His eyes kept going back to Jarl's corpse. He tried to imagine the wounds closing as his own had so long ago. But they weren't closing. Jarl was dead. He'd been alive 1 second, and now he was simply not. Kyler finally understood the wry look in Jarl's eyes, too. The Sonarian wet boy that Shinga Sniggle had ordered killed wasn't Kyler. It was V. Savari. And it was V. Savari who had killed Jarl with the red and black traitor's arrow. It was just like Jarl to find humor in it. Jarl confessed his love for a woman as she released the arrow that killed him.
Shit!
There were no words to express the magnitude of the ruin before him. Jarl was no more. This thing in front of Kyler was a slab of meat. Kyler wished he could believe in Aline's god. He wanted to think Jarl and Durzo were in a better place. But he was honest enough to know that was all he wanted. Some half-assed good feeling. Even if Aline's god were real, Jarl and Durzo didn't follow him. That meant they got to burn in hell, right? He climbed down into the grave and pulled Jarl's body in. Jarl's skin was cold, clammy. Morning dew was condensing on it. It didn't feel right. Kyler laid him down as gently as he could and climbed back out. He still didn't feel drunk. Sitting on the pile of soft dirt next to the grave, he realized it was the Kakari's fault. His body treated alcohol like any poison and healed him of it. It was so efficient that he'd have to drink massive quantities to get drunk, just like Durzo had.
Oh, I dismissed him as a drunk.
It was yet another way Kyler had misunderstood his master, another way he'd blithely condemned the man. It made everything ache all over again.
I'm sorry, brother.
Kyler realized as the words crossed his lips that Jarl had been exactly that to him, an older brother who looked out for him. Why was Kyler condemned to having revelations about what people meant to him only after they were dead?
I'll make it worth something, Jarl.
Making Jarl's sacrifice mean something meant abandoning Aline and Yuli and the life that might have been. He'd sworn to Yuli that he wouldn't abandon her as every other adult in her life had. And now he was doing it.
Was it like this for you, Master? Is this where that ocean of bitterness began? Is giving up my humanity the cost of my immortality?
There was nothing else to do. Nothing more to say. Kyla couldn't even weep. As the first birds of morning began singing beauty to the waking sun, he filled the grave. For 2 days, Yuli didn't speak or eat or drink. V drove them at a grueling pace along the Queen's Road, heading west and then north. The first night, they passed the great estates of the Wadrener nobility. By the time they stopped, a few hours after sunrise, they were in farmland. The fields were bare, the rolling hills covered with the irregular stubble of harvested spelt. The first day, Yuli waited until V had been breathing regularly for about 10 minutes. Then she bolted for her horse. She hadn't even untied the beast before V yanked her away. The second day, Yuli waited for an hour. She got up quietly enough that V almost missed it. Yuli got the tether undone that time and nearly jumped out of her clothes when she turned to reach for the horse's head and saw V standing behind her, hands on hips. Both times, V beat her. She was careful not to injure the girl. No broken bones or scars for this one. She wondered if she was being too easy on the girl, but she'd never beaten a child before. V was used to killing men, used to giving talent strength to her muscles and letting her victims deal with the consequences. If she did that with Yuli, the child would die. That didn't fit V's plans. By the third day, Yuli wasn't doing well. She still hadn't taken a drink. She refused anything V offered, and she was losing strength. Her lips were cracked and parched. Her eyes red. V couldn't help but feel a grudging admiration. The girl was tough, no doubt about it. V could stand pain better than most people, but she hated not eating. When she was 12, Hugh had routinely withheld her food, giving her only one meal a day so she wouldn't get fat. He'd put her back on full meals when he decided it was all going to her tits. But worse than the starving were the times he'd withheld water because he thought she was being lazy. The bastard never did grasp the concept of a woman's cramps. She'd had to pretend the thirst didn't bother her because she'd known if she let it show, it would have become his favorite punishment.
Look, Oogly.
V spoke as she made camp in a small valley as the sun began to rise.
I don't give a shit if you die. You're more useful to me alive than dead, but not by much. Kylar will follow me to Cenaria now either way. You, on the other hand, would probably like to see Kylar again, right?
Yuli stared back at her with sunken eyes full of hate.
And I'd guess he'd kick your ass if you die for no reason. So, hey, if you want to keep starving, you'll die pretty soon. Tomorrow I'll have to tie you to the saddle, and you might not make it through the night. That inconveniences me, but it hurts Kylar more. If you'd rather die like a kitten than stay alive and fight me, go ahead. But you're not impressing anyone.
V put a skin of water in front of Yuli and set about securing the horses. She wasn't worried about Yuli escaping now. The girl was too weak. But V talent-locked the ropes anyway. She was going to sleep today, damn it. The rolling hills were covered with forests broken now and then by a small village in a group of farm fields. The road was still broad and well-traveled, though. They'd made excellent time.
There was no way to tell how far ahead of Kyler they were, but V had avoided villages, and she had no doubt that had given Kyler precious hours on them. Yesterday evening, she'd traded the horses. If Kyler had somehow divined which tracks were theirs among the many, he'd be thrown. Still, at the rate they'd been traveling, they'd passed numerous other parties, and though she could swaddle herself in a formless cloak that disguised her sex and identity, there was no disguising that Yuli was a child. Nor was there any practical way to pass unseen on the barren hills they'd already come through. Usually, they'd just barreled past the traders' wagons and farmers' carts. It was an uneasy balance. They made better time on the road, but they were more likely to be recognized. Her only contact with Kyler had been when she tried to kill him at the Drake House. Ironically enough, King Gunder had hired V, who'd tried to assassinate his son, to kill Kyler, who tried to protect him. She'd had Kyler under her hips and under her knife the very day she took the contract. She liked him. He'd been surprisingly calm for a man in his situation. Calm and a little charming, if you thought lame humor in the face of death was cute. And she would have killed him, but she'd hesitated. No, not hesitated. It hadn't been lack of will that stayed her hand that day, so much as pride that she'd accomplished such a difficult job so quickly. Hugh never complimented her work, though under duress, Kyler's compliments had seemed genuine, and there weren't that many people a wet boy could talk shop with. So V had given in to the temptation Kyler had laid out for her, stalling so obviously that she'd let it work. Then the Duger Count had broken into the room, and Kyler landed a knife in her shoulder as she escaped. Months later, her shoulder still throbbed at times. She'd lost a little flexibility, despite instantly heading to the witch Hugh used for his healing. Next time, she wouldn't hesitate. By the time V came back to where the bedrolls were laid out, Yuli had finished the entire bag of water. She looked like she was about to be sick.
If you throw up on those blankets, you'll sleep in them dirty.
Kyla's gonna kill you, even if you are a girl.
I'm not a girl. I'm a bitch. And don't you forget it.
V tossed the bag with her food at Yuli, who dropped it.
Eat slow and not much, or you'll puke and die.
Yuli took her advice and soon flopped down on her bedroll and was asleep in seconds. V stayed up. She was tired. Achingly, grindingly tired. She only thought this much when she was exhausted. It did no good to think. It was worthless. She busied herself making the camp invisible. It was a foggy morning. They weren't far from the road, but they were in a small hollow. The stream came burbling down from the Silver Bear Hills with enough volume that most of the noise the horses might make would be covered. And with the cold camp they'd made, the human presence was barely notable here. She'd done her best to hide the horses behind a thicket. She squatted with her back to a tree and tried to convince her mind how tired her body was. The sound was dampened by the fog, but it could only be one thing. Horses. She drew a sword and a knife and dipped the knife into her poison sheath. She looked at Yuli and considered trying to magically silence the girl, but it would expose her, and she didn't know if it would work anyway. So she just pressed her back to a tree and peered toward the sound. Moments later, Kyler appeared, leading two horses. He passed 20 paces away. He must have been riding almost straight through, switching from horse to horse. He barely slowed as he approached the ford. Yuli rolled over as Kyler splashed through the stream. The horses climbed the other bank and clattered into the distance. Kyler never even turned his head. V lay down. She slept well. When she woke that evening, Yuli was still asleep. That was good. V didn't have time to chase the girl. In her place, another kidnapper would have just bound the girl and been done with it. But the strongest ropes weren't the kind that bound hands. Hopelessness was V's weapon, not hemp. Ropes of Yuli's own devising would bind her forever.
Ropes of my own devising. I know all about that, don't I?
She kicked Yuli to wake her, but not as hard as she meant to. The girl's salvation had been so close, and she'd never even known it. The most valuable skill Dorian ever learned turned out to be a simple one. He
He figured out how to eat and drink without breaking his trance. Instead of having Solon watch him for the inevitable signs of dehydration and wake him, Dorian was able to maintain his trances for weeks. Though he knew he appeared utterly disconnected from reality, the opposite was true. From his little room in the garrison at Screaming Winds, Dorian watched everything. The Cenarian garrison at Screaming Winds had been bypassed by Kalidor's invasion. Most of the Kalidoran army had simply used Quarig's Pass more than a week east. With the death of Logan's father, Duke Regnus Geyer, the garrison was being led by a young noble named Leros Vas. He was well-meaning, but he didn't know what to do without a commanding officer. Solon was giving advice that over the days sounded less like advice and more like orders. If Kalidor attacked Screaming Winds now, they would attack from the Cenarian side, so he shifted the defenses, moved the men and the supplies inside the walls. No one expected an attack, though. The truth was that Screaming Winds now protected nothing. Gareth Ur-Sul could let them grow old and die here, and all he would lose would be a trade route that hadn't been used for hundreds of years. Far to the south, Fear was doing less well, though he was tracking Kurok admirably. Fear had a hard road in front of him, and Dorian could do nothing to make it easier. Sometimes it made Dorian sick. He'd watched Fear die a dozen ways, some of them so shameful he wept, even through his trance. At best, Fear would have about 2 decades and a heroic death in front of him. As always, Dorian strayed close to his own futures. He'd found a way to do it that didn't risk madness. He simply watched the futures of other people at the places they met him. It didn't work well, though. He would see 6 ways a person might interact with him and how their choice might affect the meeting, but not his own. So he could see what, but not why. He couldn't follow a single line of his own choices to see where it would lead him. Once in a while, he could watch his own face through other people's eyes and guess what he was thinking, but those were rare flashes. It was taking too long. Even with his trance stretching over 1 month, and while he pieced his own life together, everything else changed. So he started touching his own life directly. He knew several things instantly. First, he was going to be a source of either hope or despair for tens of thousands within a year. Second, a gaping hole stretched across his possible futures. He traced it back and realized the hole was because in some paths he would choose to renounce his gift of prophecy. He was stunned. He'd thought of it before, of course. In all his training with the healers, disabling his gift was the only cure he'd been able to find for his growing madness. But Dorian's gift had seemed a gift for the whole world, and he'd gladly borne the consequences because he knew he'd be able to help others avert disaster. Third, Kali herself was coming to Screaming Winds. Dorian's heart dropped into his stomach. If she passed the garrison, she would go to Cenaria and take up residence in the hellish jail they called the Maw. Gareth Ur-Sul would have 2 of his sons build Ferali. He would use 1 against the rebel army. There would be a massacre. Kali and her entourage were still 2 days away. Dorian had time. He looked back at his own life, trying to figure out how to avert disaster. In a moment, he was swept up in the current. Faces streamed past him, became a maelstrom sucking him down. His young wife, crying. A girl, hanged. A little village in northern Wadrin, where he might live with Fear's family. A red-haired boy who was like a son to him 15 years from now. Killing his brothers, betraying his wife, telling his wife the truth and losing her. A gold mask of his own face, weeping golden tears. Marching with an army. Nefdada, walking away from an army. Solitude and madness and death 12 different ways. Down every path he could see only suffering. Every time he chose any good for himself, those he loved suffered. No. Dorian shot upright in bed, waking. Solon flinched in the chair across from Dorian. He gestured, and the lamps in the room lit.
Dorian, you're back! I hope whatever you were doing was important, because I wanted to wake you about 100 times.
Dorian's head was aching. What day was it? How long had he been catatonic? His answer was in the air itself. Kali was close.
He could feel her.
I need gold.
What?
Gold, man! I need gold!
Solon pointed to his purse on the table and pulled on boots. Dorian spilled the gold coins into his hands. He barely even hit his palm before the coins melted into a glob, instantly cooled, and wrapped around his wrist.
More! More! There's no time to lose, Solon.
How much?
As much as you can carry. Meet me in the back courtyard and rouse the soldiers, all of them. But don't ring the alarm bell.
Damn it, what is it?
Solon grabbed his sword belt and strapped it on.
No time!
Dorian was already running out of the room. In the courtyard, Dorian could swear he smelled Kali even more strongly, though the scent was purely magical. She was perhaps 2 miles distant. It was midnight now, and he suspected she'd strike an hour before dawn, the witching hour, when men are most susceptible to the night's terrors and Kali's delusions. Dorian tried to untangle what he'd seen. He couldn't imagine the garrison would hold, and if Kali caught him, the results would be as terrible for the world as for him. A prophet delivered into her hands? Dorian thought of the futures he'd seen for himself. Was it so great a sacrifice to give up seeing those rush inexorably toward him? But if he gave up his visions, he would be blind, rudderless, and useless to anyone else. It also wasn't a simple procedure. He'd described it to Solon in fear as being like smashing his own brain with a sharp rock in order to stop seizures. Ideally, he could sear one part of his own talent in such a way that it would eventually heal, but not for years. If Kali captured him, she might think his gift was gone forever and kill him. He had begun preparing the weaves before he realized he'd made up his mind. The fact that it was dark and he couldn't replenish his Glor Bearden was no problem because the amount of magic he needed was slight. He set up the weaves deftly, sharpening some and setting them aside, holding the prepared portions as if in one hand. As the magic came together, he realized that all his time in his visions, juggling different streams of time and holding place markers at decision points, had paid off in his magic. Not 5 years ago, he'd come this far with the weave, practicing it to see if he could hold 7 strands simultaneously. It had been brutal, especially knowing that letting anyone slip could make him an amnesiac, an idiot, or dead. Now, it was easy. Solon came into the yard and saw what he was doing, a look of horror on his face. And even that didn't distract Dorian. He sliced, twisted, pulled, seared, and covered one section of his talent. The courtyard was curiously silent, strangely flat, oddly constricted.
My God.
What? What have you done?
Solon, it's gone. My gift is gone.
3 days north of the Silver Bear Hills, Kyler came to the small town of Taurus Bend. He'd been pushing hard for 6 days, barely stopping long enough to rest the horses, and his body ached everywhere from his stint in the saddle. Taurus Bend was halfway to Sanaria, at the base of the Fas Meru Mountains, and Forglund's Pass. The horses needed the rest, and so did he. South of town, he'd even had to submit to a Lycanat checkpoint looking for Magi. Apparently, Wadron's queen didn't have the will or the power to expel the Lycanat either. He asked a farmer for directions to the town's inn, and soon found himself in a warm building filled with the smells of roasting meat pies and fresh ale. Most inns smelled of stale beer and sweat, but the people of northern Wadron were fastidious. Their gardens lacked weeds, their fences lacked rot, their children, very nearly, lacked dirt. They prided themselves on their industry, and the attention to detail of these simple folk was incredible. Even Durzo would have been impressed. All in all, it was a perfect place to rest. Coming into the common room, Kyler ordered enough food to make the goodwife raise her eyebrows. He sat by himself. His legs were throbbing and his butt was sore. If he never saw another horse again, it would be too soon. In what was obviously a night ritual, probably half the men of the village pushed their way through the inn's great oak door to share a pint with their friends before going home. Kyler ignored the men and their inquisitive glances. He only opened his eyes when a stout, homely woman in her 50s set 2 enormous meat pies in front of him, along with an impressive tankard of ale.
I think you'll find Mistress Zorlat's ale is as good as her pies. May I join you?
Excuse me. Sure, I'm Kyler Stern.
What do you do, Master Stern?
I'm a soldier. As a matter of fact, I'm a wet boy.
A soldier for whom?
Who are you?
Answer my question and I'll answer yours.
For Scenaria.
I was under the impression that country no longer existed.
Were you?
Caledoran goons. Meisters, the God King, conquest, rape, pillage, iron-fisted rule, ring any bells?
I guess some people would be deterred by that.
You frighten a lot of people, don't you, Kyler Stern?
What was your name again?
Ariel Vyansafaste. You can call me Sister Ariel.
Any vestige of fatigue vanished instantly. Kyler touched the Kakari within him to be sure it was ready to call up in an instant. Sister Ariel blinked. Was it because she'd seen something, or had he just let his muscles tense?
I thought this was a dangerous part of the world for people like you.
Kyler couldn't remember the stories, but he remembered something linking Taurus Bend with mages dying.
Yes, one of our young and foolhardy sisters disappeared here. I've come to look for her.
The Dark Hunter.
Sister Ariel watched in silence as he ate. He felt a twinge of suspicion, wondering what Durzo would have said if he knew Kyler was eating food served to him by Amaja. But he'd died twice already, maybe three times, and lived again. So what the hell? Besides, the pies were good, and the ale was better. Not for the first time, he wondered if it had been the same for Durzo. He'd lived for centuries, but had he been unkillable too? He must have. But he had never risked his own life. Was that only because by the time Kyler knew him, the Kakari had abandoned him? Kyler wondered sometimes if there were a downside to his power. He could live for hundreds of years. He couldn't be killed. But he didn't feel immortal. He didn't even feel the sense of power that, when he was a boy, he thought he would feel once he became a wet boy. He was a wet boy now, more than a wet boy. And he felt like he was still just Kyler. Still Azoth, the clueless, scared child.
Have you seen a beautiful woman come riding through here, sister?
No. Why?
If you do, kill her.
Why? Oh, is she your wife?
The god doesn't hate me that much. She's an assassin.
So, you're not a soldier, but an assassin hunter.
I'm not hunting her. I wish I had the time. But she may come through here.
What's so important that you would abandon justice?
Nothing. But justice has been too long denied elsewhere.
Where?
Suffice it to say that I'm on a mission for the king.
There is no king of Scenaria except the God King.
Not yet.
There is no man who can unite Scenaria, even against the God King. Perhaps Terra Grayson can, but she's scarcely a man, is she?
You sisters like to think you've got it all figured out, don't you?
You know that you're an infuriating young ignoramus.
Only as much as you're a tired old bag.
Do you truly think I'd kill some young woman for you?
I don't suppose you would. Forgive me. I'm tired. I forgot that the Seraph's hand only reaches beyond its ivory halls to take things for itself.
Young man, I don't take well to impudence.
You've succumbed to the intoxication of power, sister. You like watching people jump. So color me scared.
Another temptation of power is to strike down those who vex you. You, Kyler Stern, are tempting me.
Oh, they say the old age is a second childhood, sister. Besides which, the moment you drew power, I'd kill you.
Instead of getting angrier, Sister Ariel's face grew thoughtful.
You can tell the moment I draw magic?
One way to find out. But it would be a bother to dispose of your corpse and cover my tracks, especially with all these witnesses.
How would you cover your tracks?
Come now. You're in Taurus Bend. How many of the mages who have been killed by the Dark Hunter here do you think were really killed by the Dark Hunter? Don't be naive. The thing probably doesn't even exist.
Well, you're wrong about one thing. It exists.
If everyone who's ever gone into the woods has died, how do you know?
You know, young man, there's a way for you to prove that we're all crazy.
Go into the woods?
You wouldn't be the first to try.
I'd be the first to succeed.
You're awfully full of braggadocio about the things you'd do if only you had the time.
Fair enough, Sister Ariel. I accept your correction. Until the day Scenaria has a king. Now, if you'll excuse me.
One moment. I'm going to draw the power. but I swear by the White Seraph that I won't touch you with it. If you must kill me, I won't try to stop you.
She didn't wait for him to respond. He saw a pale, iridescent nimbus surround her. It shifted quickly through every color in the rainbow in deliberate succession, though some colors seemed somehow thicker than others. Was that an indication of her strength in the various disciplines of magic? He readied the Kakari to devour whatever magic she threw at him, hoping he remembered what he had done before, and not sure that he did, but he didn't strike. The nimbus disappeared. She nodded her head as if satisfied.
Dogs find you very odd, don't they?
What?
It was true, but he'd never thought much of it.
Maybe you can tell me why. After days of hard riding, don't you smell of sweat and gut and horse? Indeed, you have no scent whatsoever.
You're imagining things. Goodbye, sister.
Until we meet again, Kyler Stern.